Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It's Shake Them Ropes, episode 300 and let's say 25. My name is Chris Novembrino, and with me, as always, to take a look at Fastlane 2019 is Jeff Hawkins. Jeff, how you doing?
Well, it's been an interesting couple of nights in the WWE, hasn't it?
It sure has. These two episodes have many, many things going on. I think we need to start with the news, though, that happened here with the passing of King Kong Bundy.
Yeah.
King Kong Bundy, dead around the age of 60?
I believe 61. Which is kind of amazing when you think about it, because people, it's very odd. I think people have a view that King Kong Bundy was much older than he really was when he was wrestling. He was, on that first major run after WrestleMania 3, he was 31. By the time he got out and was doing movies and TV, like Married with Children. He was also in a Richard Pryor movie I remember called Moving, because I actually took an improv class from the guy who wrote Moving. he got in early, and it's weird because for me, I really loved him in World Class on that short run before he got to WWE. He's one of those big guys who could talk if you gave him the chance. And he also looked far more menacing once he shaved his head, because he looked like a kid when he had his hair, but when he didn't, he looked much older than he was, so everybody thought he was much older when he left.
He looked like the Kingpin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was the closest thing you could have as a wrestler to the Kingpin, and he was a good promo. I think he just has a really great, really intense and expressive face. He's just menacing.
Okay, I want to quote something here. Tommy Rich and Brett Sawyer have said that you're just big, fat, and clumsy. How do you react to that?
Tommy Rich and Brett Sawyer said that. Well, you know, let me tell you something right now. After those two sawed-off little geeks are going to find out exactly how clumsy I am when I crush both of them like bugs. I'm an athlete. I'm a world-class athlete, and I don't appreciate those two little geeks saying that about me. Tommy Rich.
Okay, Great. Well, our fan question this week comes from Fred Mitlitsky of San Francisco, California. And he points out that you were first discovered in a bar in Atlantic City, and that at that time you considered yourself the toughest man in the world. Now that you've gone up against the world-class competition of professional wrestling, do you still consider yourself the toughest man in the world?
I am definitely the toughest man in the world. I'm the only man in professional wrestling has never been body slammed. That's why I have my $15,000 challenge to anybody, anywhere in professional wrestling or out of it that can take me off my feet and slam me. That's $15,000. And I want to see one of those little geeks like Tommy Wildflower Rich or one of the Sawyer sisters. I want to see them take King Kong Bundy off his feet and slam him. Calling me big and fat and clumsy. They're going to pay for that. They're going to pay for it after, and you're going to pay too. If you don't shut your mouth.
I'm sorry, we're just doing an interview with you. That's all. Sorry.
He had better quote-unquote work rate before WWF, which never really required it. He'd spent some time in world class. He was in Crockett for a very short run right before the national expansion, because you can see in 84, he's like in the background in the locker room. I think he was only in there for like a month or so, maybe even only a few weeks, maybe one set of tapings, when Dusty Rhodes is like carted out or something. You see Bundy among the faces there, but it's one of those things where he came back for a short run in the mid-90s with like the Million Dollar Corporation, and then you could just tell he'd kind of, you know, he hadn't really kept in shape that well. He wasn't moving around as great as he was. He was just there kind of to be a menace. and basically get fed to the Undertaker. But, you know, I remember Bundy as being a lot more, being a lot better of a talker than most big guys of his day, like a Big John Studd or an Andre. He was a guy with a little bit more personality, but he is also a guy who was smaller than most giants. So I don't think he necessarily got his due as a big man, with, of course, the exception of the main event of WrestleMania 2 against Hogan.
Pretty good for a guy who never had a title in the WWF.
Right. In world class, he had the American Heavyweight Championship a couple times, and then he held the American Tag Team Championship with Bill Irwin and Bugsy McGraw. That Bill Irwin team fascinates me. I don't know what, because I like Bill Irwin. And he held, in Continental, he held the tag team titles with Rick Rude. There's another team. I gotta look up tape of that.
Is there anything else in the news section you want to look at before we move into Fastlane?
Hall of Fame. We haven't touched on it yet, but I will now. Seems right now Honky Tonk Man, Brutus Beefcake, and Torrie Wilson are going in. By the way, King Kong Bundy, not yet in the WWE Hall of Fame. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy, especially if you're putting in Brutus Beefcake.
God. Who's gonna induct him is my question. And I
Brother, oh. I'm going to tell you who's going to induct him.
Oh, yeah. Either that or Greg Valentine. But no, I out of all these, for me, the WWF style was made for a guy like Wayne Ferris, a.k.a. Honky Tonk Man, a guy who was pretty good in his younger days as a tag team wrestler. He was with the Blonde Bombers. And then he goes and he just gets this character and just doesn't have to do almost anything the rest of his life.
He just has to bump. He has to sell and do promos.
He just has to get heat. That's all he has to do is get heat. And that's what he was good at. I like the Honky Tonk Man shtick, but it was also at the time during my peak fandom. So it was also one of the things where I'd watch WWF and go, all right, that's kiddie wrestling. Give me the men. Type of thing. It just made it more of a cartoon than I was, you know, inclined to like. Torrie Wilson is one of those intriguing people to me because I tend to think she was about 10 years ahead of her time. And if she had come in later, they could have really trained her to be something as opposed to just a fitness model who happened to look good on photo shoots. I think she could have actually, with like a performance center type of setup, actually been a fairly decent wrestler.
Interesting. Flesh this case out for me more, because this is in my gap in watching wrestling, so I don't really have a ton of context for Torrie Wilson.
Well, she was originally in WCW for a while.
Right. I remember that.
She was helping with, I think she was in the same entourage as...
She was with
Macho Man. And then eventually came over to WWF, and, you know, it's a little bit in my gap as well, but I know that she was, you know, she'd have one-on-one matches with all the usual suspects. I think Stacy Keibler was over there at the time as well. You know, it'd be a lot of the lingerie, panty fight, or pillow fight type things, and... You know, it wasn't great wrestling, and then, you know, Lita, and then it was right before when Lita and Trish came in, so she was kind of that stopgap measure between, say, an Ivory and a Trish Stratus. And she could do a few. And all you had to do really is do about two or three athletic moves, and you'd be over with the crowd because you were an attractive woman. That's about it. I mean, I have no problem with her going to. I mean, look, I don't view the Hall of Fame as anything other than, you know, corporate fealty in any way. So, I mean.
WWE is going to honor who they want to honor on any given year, and they're also delaying inducting certain people so that they can have Hall of Fame shows that are all of a similar level of quality.
I mean, she's a good spokesperson. She's made a life for herself outside of WWE, which is always one of those things that's good for them in that she can walk away at any time. She's had some...
But to your point earlier, it's a shame that King Kong Bundy didn't get to get that honor while he was still alive.
Well, same with Vader. Same with a lot of guys.
I agreed with it. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she's had some... I mean, she, you know, very high-profile dated Alex Rodriguez of the Yankees when he was on that team. But, you know, she's kind of had a...
Is that a WWE accomplishment or just really more of a life thing?
That's more of a life thing in terms of, expanding your celebrity after WWE. So, I mean,
that's true. That's true.
You know, she has a brand now. She has a fitness brand. She does workouts. I think she may even do like some health and fitness products. But, you know, if she wants to come back at the pop, she still looks good, which I think is very important to them. Because obviously she's been in like the last two Royal Rumbles. So, I mean, she's a good ambassador, and she's fairly young, and she'll give an energetic speech, and she'll drive eyeballs for people who are nostalgic for that period. So I'm fine with it.
Any other bits of news, or should we get into Fastlane?
Let's get into Fastlane and Raw, shall we?
All right, so we're beginning on the kickoff show, not the pre-show, Jeff, with Andrade Cien Almas versus Rey Mysterio. How do you see this one going?
Man, I know that they should give Andrade the win here because it's the kickoff show. He's the guy you need to build. But man, I can't help but think they're just going to start this with Rey Mysterio getting a win to help please the crowd. I'm more.
Yeah, no, I think it's Rey Mysterio. I think Rey Mysterio is winning this one.
The lost storyline due to the actions of SmackDown where Samoa Joe won the U.S. title tonight is why was Rey Mysterio so eager to answer this open challenge? That's one of those things where if they had kept the storyline going and I were R-Truth, I'd be going, how come you're always out here to try and get a piece of my title? But they're going to drop it in favor of this feud. It's going to be a pre-show, so it's going to be a half-full crowd. Think everybody's going to kind of go through the motions, what we've seen on the past two SmackDown matches. I think it's Zelina Vega will probably get a Hurricanrana in there. But, I just think Rey Mysterio is going to win for some reason.
Yeah, I think the through line that they're going to find for why Rey Mysterio wanted to answer the call to the U.S. Open Challenge along with Andrade is that both of them thought that they would have won the title last week had the other one not gotten in each other's way. So it's Andrade's fault that Rey Mysterio didn't win the title and vice versa. And that's the through line here. I don't even know that they're going to go that far. That is one form of an out, though, that they have available to them.
But we've seen these guys have matches already on SmackDown. I'm just wondering, are they going to up it for this one, or are they just kind of replay, you know, all the hits? You know, the Canadian Destroyer and, you know, a couple of reverse Ranas and a 619 and, you know, go home.
I think they play it really, really safe on the kickoff show. It's been a while since they've been ambitious on the kickoff show. So whenever you see that one with the P next to it on Wikipedia for the pre-show or the kickoff show, as it were, you just kind of know that this is not going to be ambitious in terms of storytelling. Up next, we have The Usos versus The Miz and Shane McMahon for the SmackDown Tag Team Championship. What do we think about this match?
First of all, The Usos cut a great promo tonight, I thought, on SmackDown.
I completely agree.
But between them and Samoa Joe, the South Pacific Islanders, all of them are cutting the best promos in this company.
Can we put them together as a faction? Because I'm kind of into that. Put all the belts together. You know, you got the tag champions and the U.S. champions kind of mobbing it up.
It's in Cleveland. The story is going to be about Miz and Shane, who are going to lose this match. And it just...
And the Miz's dad. Something's going to happen with the Miz's dad.
So, who turns on who is the question after the match. I think... Because it's in his hometown, I think the Miz ends up turning to get the boos and the heel heat to set up Miz versus Shane for WrestleMania.
I want to not have to do Miz versus Shane as a singles match. I don't really have a whole lot of place for singles Matt Shane anymore at WrestleMania. But I think that they're breaking up here.
Yeah.
Somehow the dad's going to get involved. That's going to be a relevant factor here. Third on the card here, at least according to Wikipedia, is Daniel Bryan versus Kevin Owens for the WWE Planetary Championship.
I would not put too much stake in the listing of the order of the matches, given that the triple threat of the tag team match is listed last. So,
okay, yeah, it's true. That's true. That can't possibly be right. All right. Well, whatever. We're doing Daniel Bryan versus Kevin Owens right now. So, Kevin Owens has a new friend. It's not Sami Zayn. It's Mustafa Ali.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about that?
That will be hell of a heat once he turns on Mustafa Ali. That's what I'm thinking, because it's going to be the Sami Zayn playbook. I think it's interesting. It's weird, this Kevin Owens character, because I think they've now established this week and tonight especially that he is an avatar for WWE fans, for better or for worse. I don't know why they decided to go this way, but because of his everyman persona, they're going to try and humanize him as much as possible and make him symbolic of things in the WWE universe. Perhaps eventually Vince decides things in the WWE universe he doesn't like. But I don't think Mustafa Ali gets involved in this match. I think this is one where the New Day end up coming down and Ruthless Aggression or something kicks in, and they don't turn the New Day, but the New Day says, hey, you took away my title shot, we're going to ruin yours. Daniel Bryan retains.
Yeah, I think Daniel Bryan definitely retains here, and I am kind of still confused about the Kevin Owens character. I think you're on the money, and this is pretty much in line with what I was talking about they might do with Kevin Owens when they first rolled out those promo packages, that we're now focusing on him as a good dad and humanizing him, and he's a wrestling fan now, and those are going to be the points of emphasis for this character, which would make it strange if they kind of shotgunned the heel turn. So I think babyface Kevin Owens might be around for a while. And then let's talk about that New Day promo. I thought that New Day promo was terribly tone deaf. They're on the streets of India and Kofi Kingston's having a good time, but more importantly, in the background behind Xavier and Big E, which is just like a small thing, but optically he's supposed to be the focus of this promo.
Yeah, it's a get over what great brand ambassadors they are, and that's not needed in this story. What's needed is, oh, we're working for a company who took away my title shot, and now we're in India, and I can't do anything about it.
I'm going to still be a good... No, here's the better
good
way
loyal
to do this.
Soldier.
You're coming down the street. Yeah, they're in the cab or whatever they're in, and they're talking about it, and Kofi's feeling down, and they're like, we still got to be good soldiers. We're about making people happy. This is, you know, you love doing this. And you know, then Kofi gets out and he's all smiles on the back end of that promo. But to have him on the street and just being like, I'm having a great time here in India. I mean, really? I'd be mildly frustrated that I have a big championship title match, one that I've been waiting for 11 years on Sunday, and I'm across the globe and not getting a chance to prepare.
Hey, we screwed you over, but you're still a great employee. Look at how great he is. I'm just like, yeah, it's absolutely tone deaf. I think your terminology was perfect.
All right, so let's do the Revival versus Aleister Black and Ricochet versus Chad Gable and Bobby Roode. So did Chad Gable and Bobby Roode turn heel on Monday? Let me ask you that question.
For the purposes of this program, yes. But this has been a week where everybody is blurring lines, as we'll get to with the Becky and Ronda promo. I think it's going to be two heel teams versus Aleister Black and Ricochet to help get them over as the white meat baby faces.
Yes.
This match I think is going to be great if they give it time. It's going to be kind of a train wreck. And I think eventually
it's not on the kickoff show.
No.
I bet you this is going to be very, very good.
I think the Revival steal the win against like either Roode or Gable, so that they don't have to pin either Black or Ricochet. I don't think they're going to give them the tag team titles. And if they did, that'd be fascinating, because I'd want to hear Jim Cornette's thoughts on that, to be honest with you. But, I mean, it's like you make the Revival your tag team champions only to be a transitional team for 3 weeks and then give it to Aleister Black and Ricochet. I'm not sure that's building up the division like they want to. Maybe it is. But I think the Revival retain until Mania, and then they lose him.
I think the bold move here is to have the Revival get the pinfall in a banana peel sort of way on Ricochet. rather than Chad Gable and Bobby Roode. So Ricochet is down, and they snipe the pinfall from Chad Gable and Bobby Roode, and then they have this pinfall over Ricochet, which they can lord over Aleister Black and Ricochet and gloat about.
How about this? Aleister Black accidentally hits Ricochet with Black Mass.
Oh, okay. That would be another way to go.
And then they pin Ricochet. I could go for that.
Yeah, I think that that's the slick way out of this. I don't know. They might go chalk and just have the Revival pin someone like Chad Gable or Bobby Roode, though.
Mm-hmm.
So then you want to go with the Boston Hug connection versus Nia Jax and Tamina?
Yeah, WWE rule of booking. Whoever loses the go-home match usually wins on the pay-per-view. Which is, I think Bayley and Sasha play baby faces in peril here. Underdogs to the monster team.
This one feels real predictable.
Pin Tamina.
I think that's right. Then we get Asuka versus Mandy Rose, and I liked this little save spot at the end of the very almost too quick Naomi squash tonight by Mandy Rose. But I enjoyed that beatdown that Asuka delivered to Mandy Rose and to Sonya Deville after the match. I thought that that was very effective. Good way to get heat on Asuka. Obviously, her cutting promos, not the strongest way to do it. Her kicking people's asses, definitely a good way to do it.
Does Asuka retain?
Yeah, I think Asuka retains.
I think Mandy Rose gets the title. I don't.
You really do?
I don't have any reason to think that, other than the fact that they can't book Asuka as a monster going into Mania because they don't have an opponent for her unless it's Natty. I could see Asuka retaining this and then going on to Natty, or I could see them building Mandy Rose Asuka rematch for Mania and then having Asuka win. For some reason, having Mandy win against her and then get beat up by Asuka, I think she has to win by cheating, and they're always willing to make Asuka look stupid and lose somehow in these types of matches. If you recall the cage match with Carmella, where she hits their head on the cage and gets pinned, I could see something like that with Sonya Deville happening and Mandy Rose winning the title.
Yeah, maybe. I just don't know that I think they're going to put the belt on Mandy Rose here on Sunday.
Yeah, it
feels early. It just doesn't, like, it doesn't feel right.
It's so weird because they're not going to change. It feels like they're not going to change any titles going into Mania. Yet you'd think they'd change one, and maybe it was the Samoa Joe one, and
they did change a title.
Yeah, that's going to be for John Cena to come back eventually. I guess that's what you could consider it. Chalk says Asuka wins this, but I think I still put out about 25% that Mandy Rose gets this belt.
Okay, and then we get The Shield versus Baron Corbin, Drew McIntyre, and Bobby Lashley. Now, Jeff, I think maybe I have the weird take on this one. I think there's a decent chance that Baron Corbin, Drew McIntyre, and Bobby Lashley win this match.
I will let you expound on that in a moment. I want to get to on Raw this match between Corbin, McIntyre, and Lashley versus Strowman, Finn, and Kurt Angle. What are they doing with Kurt Angle? Good Lord. He's an old guy out there to get beat up now. He's not a legend.
They had this great match with Kurt Angle and Drew McIntyre several months ago, and I guess that's technically the premise for him being in this match, and that could have set up a really interesting redemption story, one last ride story, but now you have Kurt Angle feeling completely 100% unspecial.
Yeah, that's what's killing me right now. I'm like, when he came back, it was like, oh, this is, and he teamed with The Shield. He filled in for the injured, was it Ambrose? Yeah, it was Ambrose. And you're like, okay, this is a special event. This is kind of cool. And they didn't look great. And they came back for that other one last match. And you're like, okay. And then he was in the Rumble. And now he's a guy in six-man tags getting beat. Now, you remember, and this is a great plug for our Patreon episode, which just dropped today, www.patreon.com/shakethemropes. We watched the Great American Bash 85, and we talked about Ron Bass and the jobs he was doing on the way out. This is what it feels like they're doing with Kurt Angle in some ways.
I think that Corbin, McIntyre, and Lashley have a chance of winning this. Again, I put this at low, like 15-20%. Just because the Shield is not going to be together, right? Like, this whole thing is one last time. Dean's on his way out. There's no reason to give the Shield a win other than to feel good for the audience. And Corbin, McIntyre, and Lashley, but particularly McIntyre, could actually be beneficiaries from a big win over the Shield. So that's my theory as to why I think there's a chance, a small chance, that the heels end up picking up the win here over the Shield.
Let me go with another thing. I think the Shield win this match, but I think Dean Ambrose turns on either Reigns or Rollins after the match. I think that's the way they're going to go here, and I think the smart money is to say that he does it to Roman, number one, because Roman's on this big babyface push, and Dean can be the heel that loses at WrestleMania to him because Roman doesn't have anything to do there. And Rollins is already predisposed to go with Lesnar. So I think
Dean could also cost them the match.
Yeah.
So they end up losing this match, and they lose this match because Dean screws over Roman.
But that doesn't help Drew. That's the thing.
No, I mean, heels can just take a win, though, and doesn't matter if there's an asterisk attached to it.
I think for the way that they do their stories, I thought that the reformation of the Shield was pretty good. They never have that real talk amongst, like, Roman and Dean. It's more like the bro talk, like, bro, you can talk to me anytime, as opposed to, hey, look, I know you've always been moody and stuff, but let's work past this. There's never that depth to a reunion story other than, bro, we used to be boys.
Well, just like last week, I think that not having Roman and Dean talk is a blocking choice, and I think perhaps that is one more potential indicator to a Roman and Dean motion occurring at some point during their match here at Fastlane.
But I did like that Dean blew them off because, hey, I gotta get ready for a match. I thought that was like, okay, there you go. That's realistic. I'm not going to talk about this crap right now.
Yeah, Dean anguishing at the top of the stairwell didn't necessarily work great for me. Like, because then when it comes down to even up the odds, the math doesn't actually make sense because he'd have been 3-on-2 for a while. So Dean did come into the ring and do an able job firing up as much as one person could possibly fire up on three bigger dudes. But yeah, that was a little bit of a stretch. They kind of rushed this a little bit. It didn't feel special. The crowd wants to see them back together, sure, but you could have made them want it more. You could have brought this up to a kind of a greater climax.
Well, you can't because it's the go home show.
No, I know. Well, I mean, you could if you rolled this back. Presumably, they knew that they were going to have some availability with Roman for a minute here.
Yeah, so, I mean, I could see the heels winning this, but, you know, Corbin's kind of the designated sacrificial lamb in this entire match in terms of he's...
No, I know. He's a heat sink. He's a heat sink. One other thing from the tag match here on Monday is we have further advancement of Leo Rush being a bit of the dump truck, being a bit of the victim. Lashley celebrating the ring, not worried about Leo Rush after the match, even though Leo Rush has been obliterated on the outside. So I think we are slowly building to Leo as a sympathetic figure, if not a full-on babyface.
Yeah, it's just, do you want him as a babyface when you watch those Braun Strowman Saturday Night Live guys vignettes? God.
Those were hilarious. Oh, my God. The antics were so zany. I mean, the kids, you know what they love, Jeff? They love references to John Stossel getting his ass kicked by Dr. D. Schultz.
And you know what else they love? They love meta commentary on wrestling. Yay, isn't this stuff all fake?
Right, which sits in really strong dissonance to the Ronda Rousey promo later on in the evening,
oh,
right?
Dude, this thing... Not only this one, but the Hunter promo, and then the Stephanie promo after the Ronda stuff. It's like all of it was just like, let's just tear down the fourth wall and make commentary about wrestling while we're doing wrestling, as opposed to being in character and a real show. It was so disconnecting. Yeah, okay. So the next one, next match is, and final match, main event, Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. So we get Becky coming down to sign a hold harmless waiver with Charlotte. Ronda shows up. Becky goes, stands next to Charlotte behind Stephanie, smiling as Ronda comes down. That's bad staging all the way around anyways when you have a blood feud between Charlotte and Becky. Ronda comes in. They basically decided to Deus Ex Machina the title abdication, which was the word of the week, obviously. But, you know, oh, I was just letting you hold it for a week. And then
I want my title back now. I'm unabdicating it.
Yeah. And then Ronda cutting. You remember last week, we had some audio problems, but last week, basically, my statement on Ronda was she's rushing it because she's nervous and she's not a very confident performer. She did it again, and again she sounded like a petulant teenager rather than a self-assured ass-kicker. I mean, she rushed through that, boo the woo, damn the man, and I forget the bitch or something, just hit somebody. And everybody.
Yeah, and that was right after a quick speech that was like a classic heel turn speech, too.
Yeah, so who's...
Right, where she says, I don't need you as the fans, I don't like you, I'm not fans of any of you, I'm not here to entertain you, I came out, I've been the best. It was a bunch of kind of connected thoughts that were associated, but sort of loosely associated at times.
Yeah, I mean, I think the clarification came after the show went off the air and for WWE.com when she came back and she was kind of, I think she was potatoing Becky a bit and saying, you want to put that funny stuff on Twitter? It's one of those Russo-type storylines where, hey, we're working it on social media and we're shooting on TV. And I was just like, it doesn't work because you also have the visual of Becky standing there smiling next to Stephanie McMahon when she should be sitting on a turnbuckle in the corner as opposed to standing there, you know, unified with Charlotte and Stephanie. It came off, and then she just gets her butt kicked for the entire.
And the whole harmless angle is really strange, right? I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop there. What is Stephanie's angle with the hold harmless angle?
Well, that goes into her promo afterwards, which is, you know, we're doing what's best for business. She's the evil corporate person. You can't sue us. I'm just doing what's best. I'm the business lady who's making all of this happen. It's such a... Stephanie does not need to be involved in this angle. That's the thing.
No, she doesn't. She confuses this angle, and it makes me think that she has more to play in this angle after the fact. Like, after Fastlane, we're not done with Stephanie's involvement.
Exactly. It feels like she's about ready to make a corporate choice in it. So we're going to get Becky, who's kind of screwed over. We're going to get either Charlotte or Ronda as the corporate choice. And I think it's going to be Charlotte. And we're going to get Ronda as the ass kicker, you know, wild card, stone cold type or whatever, when they're trying to get this over as Becky. And then basically Ronda breaks both of Becky's arms. Ronda breaks both of Becky's arms while Charlotte kind of sits there and watch. And then tonight on SmackDown, Becky just beats up Charlotte like there's no damage having been done the night before. I'm flummoxed by this build.
Yeah, I mean, we knew it was going to be bumpy to get to the three-way, but man, it is really, really bumpy to get to the three-way when we could have just had a very straightforward Ronda versus Becky match at Mania.
Yeah, it's fairly obvious Becky's going to win this. I'm assuming there will be some veil of controversy so that Charlotte can dispute Becky having to be added to the match. I don't know how they get there. I don't really want to know how they get there.
Any chance that Becky does not win this match?
Yes. And that's even worse because then it's going to be all about Becky trying to find a way to get inserted into the match the entire time while they build up Charlotte and, 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 and Ronda. I'm
thinking that that might actually be the pathway, that it's all about Becky's road to WrestleMania and having to overcome Stephanie and that sort of thing.
Having to overcome the corporate.
I'm not necessarily convinced. Yeah, I'm not necessarily convinced that this is a stone cold lock for Becky, although I am certain that she will be in the match at Mania.
Charlotte wins by cheating, thus cheating Becky out of her match, thus getting the heat, and thus Becky somehow having to petition away to get back in the match, and probably done through Ronda Rousey again. But that's my only thing, is if they screw Becky here, it's just the Ronda story over again, where she wanted Becky this entire time.
We've gotten very convoluted in this Charlotte Becky Ronda angle here. Let's talk about Heavy Machinery real quick as a quick little palate cleanser before we get into like Triple H and some of this other stuff. Heavy Machinery faced the B-Team, the Ascension, and Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder in a gauntlet match. This is actually not that far removed from what you and I were talking about last week, where we have Heavy Machinery facing multiple people in a match, but I thought this was about as ineffective a way of doing that as you could. What would be much more impressive is Heavy Machinery beating up, you know, four guys on the other side of the ring. Whereas this gauntlet match, I don't know. These teams got in just enough offense for it not to seem like Heavy Machinery was dominating the match, even though they made short order of all of these teams.
Number one, that vignette was horrible. In the locker room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, the locker room thing was absolutely terrible.
Number two, I'm not getting paid any residuals for them stealing he's a Chris Farley character. Okay. I saw that. I went, someone might be listening. Here's the other thing. And this is the thing that not a lot of people are talking about. Other than, you know, the my feelings are hurt line, I thought was just absolutely dreadful. But not only are these teams getting treated like geeks in the ring, the commentary team is mocking every single team in this match other than Heavy Machinery. I couldn't believe it. They were making fun of Ryder and Hawkins, who are supposedly on a redemption arc, but are somehow thrown into this match. And everything about the booking of this match was weird too. I mean, the B team, disposable, they should have been first. But the Ascension should have been the last guys in this match, right?
Yeah. I mean, if anything, you want to make Connor seem like at least some degree of a threat. That's the idea.
That said, Victor is the best guy out of all six of these guys. I don't care. I like Victor a lot. I thought his cornball, villainous, you know, monologuing, again, very underrated actor as a wrestler. Even if you don't like his in-ring work, I think he's fantastic on promos. I wish they could find something else to do with him. But yeah, this is just weird. But listening to like Corey and Renee just bury, you know, oh, they collect action figures, or they have an action figure podcast and they're doing comedy. It was a very kind of meta type commentary at the same time. And I'll tell you where else it gets confusing. This Lacey Evans repackaging, so to speak, as the sassy Southern Belle. And she comes out on Raw, and for the second week in a row, they're pushing her as, oh, she's classing up the joint. I thought she was a heel this entire time, Chris.
I thought she was a heel this entire time. And what's funny is this babyface repackaging of her actually kind of makes her have more heel heat with me in a weird way.
Yeah.
Something about me being told that she's sassy is like nails on a chalkboard.
Southern Belles, prissy Southern Belles don't make for great baby faces because they're supposed to be snotty.
Well, Southern Belles are sort of, by definition, not down to earth.
They're snotty and demeaning by definition. What? And R-Truth with the,
right?
R-Truth with the comeback, Ms. Sexy Gloves.
Yeah, and then to have her come out and interrupt R-Truth, that would be a heel move to do.
Yeah.
R-Truth is this very over-popular babyface act, and you come out, and I mean, I guess the argument they'd make is, well, it fits into the zany universe that R-Truth sort of occupies. And that's kind of true, but still, the messaging is just muddy or unclear enough on Lacey Evans that you want to have clarity with these new strokes if you're trying to get her over as a babyface.
Dude, I figured out who she was. I figured out who she is now. There, in the old Warner Brothers cartoons, there would be these cartoons where you'd have the characters fighting and they'd be going along with their cartoon. And every so often, this weird, like a cat.
The very attractive cat comes in and distracts Pepe Le Pew.
Well, no. That's too on the nose. That's no. This is just, there's a cartoon and there's just this cat that'll walk across the thing with like music or something. And they'll look at it for a second and they'll go back to what they're doing. And then at the end will be the reveal of what is this cat doing out here? That's who Lacey Evans is right now. She's that weird third character who has no business in this cartoon, but at the end will reveal that, oh, she's behind this entire thing all along. Actually, you know what? That could go into the Asuka Mandy Rose match.
Ooh, interesting. We'll put a feather in that or something. Put a pin in that? Something.
Yeah.
Whatever that phrase is. Let's go with that one. Now let's wrap up the show by talking a little bit about this Triple H promo. So, for reasons that are not entirely clear to me, Triple H decided that he needed to talk about Richard Flair rather than Ric Flair, that we needed to do some sort of fourth wall teardown to get this angle over.
I loved this promo, Chris. Because it had...
Yeah, I didn't like this.
And it's not because I actively hated it. It's because it had so many great qualities and it did too much. And by doing too much, it made it a bad promo. This is the big Triple H building, getting himself over and building up the big emotional thing. And
we didn't need to go to Ric Flair, dude.
No, you didn't have to go to Ric Flair. You didn't have to go to Bad Guy 101 by demeaning him. You just had to say what happened in history, because they had already played the video package. Just go over the evolution upstaging and ruining a good moment. Go over beating up Ric Flair and ruining his moment, and now you're angry about it. You don't have to do this invoking the dead kid again. You don't have to go into his real name. You don't have to go into, I'm not playing the character Triple H here. Which drove me nuts.
All the rest of this show is fake, but this is real.
Yes.
And Rhonda had notes of that, too.
Yes. Both of them did. And it's just like, dude, the thing that made wrestling cool, the wrestling that you liked, Triple H, because I know Triple H loves the Jim Crockett promotion stuff. I know he loves Harley Race. I know he loves Ric Flair. Did Harley Race ever say, I'm playing a character right now? No, he was just Harley Race the entire time.
No, but in Tripp's heyday, when Vince Russo ruled the earth there for, you know, 6 months or whatever it was, this is exactly the type of thing that you would expect
yes,
out of wrestling.
Yes, but all he has to do is be angry at Dave Bautista. The whining stuff was perfect. It was pitch perfect. Every time you leave here, you're whining. And just go into his Hollywood career and go, do you do that on set too when you don't get your way? Just be direct. And he had every note of a great promo in here. Every note. And I was liking it. And then there'd be that moment where he'd say something and go, ah, oh, God.
Ironically, when he broke kayfabe, that's when he lost me on the promo.
Yeah.
It was when we started calling him Richard Flair and everything that I was like, I mean, come on, man. Let's stay within the lines here.
It's rare that I get this angry at a promo. And it really, because I wanted to love it, because the build is there and it's
the surprise return was awesome.
And you know what my favorite touch of the whole Dave part was he's wearing a blue nose ring. Last week, I'm like, there it is. Blue Tista is back. That's so awesome. But, dude, you don't have... I mean, when... It's one of those weird things that bad television writers do where they think it has to be overly dramatic when it just has to be dramatic and you let the actors put in the emotion for it. This was just two steps too far over the
this
line.
This got
for
ramped
me.
Up to 10 very, very quickly, and I don't know how you re-raise beyond this.
Oh, you have them fight in the crowd and have the pull apart.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we go next. I'm just saying in terms of words-wise, I don't know where you re-raised.
And I thought Dave was fine. I thought Dave's promo about, you know what, I don't want to come to Philly because I don't like people in Philly. I was like, okay, that's cool. I'll take that. That's cheap heat, but it's a good kind of cheap heat. I mean, he was understated. He didn't raise his voice. Once Dave raises his voice, then it might escalate a bit more. But see, the Triple H thing just, it bothered me. To the point of, look, we can either have a realistic wrestling program or we can have, hey, we're all here to entertain and please the fans. You can't have it both ways because then everything gets muddled. Well, if you want to listen to our Patreon episodes, patreon.com/shakethemropes. Well, again, we just dropped Ringmasters Great American Bash 85 today. In order to do that, you can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at ChrisNovembrino. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. Chris, let them know where else they can find you.
My other show, cranking out news and politics episodes all the time, is Don't Worry About the Government. You can find it over at don'tworry.tv. And my other show, which just dropped a new episode today, is the All in the Family podcast. Go and check it out at allinthefamilypodcast.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
We'll see you on Thursday night, Friday morning for 205 Live, NXT UK, and NXT.
Here it comes again, lunch. Will it be the same old, or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.